Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting from our location today, handling the last week of a retreat and helping people on a journey to health and wellness. Today, we're going to start with the latest on health and healing, then a continuation of our in-depth, original investigative reports on Wikipedia. We're going to show you how gross bias and intent to do harm to a person's reputation, in this case, one of the smartest people on the planet and one of the most courageous, Professor Rupert Sheldrake. Also today, we're going to hear about, are universities digging their own graves? Who says? Professor Jonathan Haidt does. And then, if time permits, we hear people build up as legendary, iconic. Margaret Sanger is one of those. She found Planned Parenthood. Whether you agree or disagree with Planned Parenthood is your perspective. But what you may not know is the hidden side of this woman. I do not respect Margaret Sanger. I think that she is a person that helped foment policies that led to the sterilization of African-American women. She was a rampant racist. Who says? What's the proof? Today, in her own words, from her own articles and books, Margaret Sanger, you'll see the dark side of her that people who support her Planned Parenthood never want to come forward. Well, we'll share it with you. If you want to hear this program, and for any reason your local stations or where you're at, you're not able to tune in each day and get it, you can go to the archives and download up to 5 shows with one call, 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Now to the latest on health and healing. From the University of Western Ontario comes a study showing that too much sleep is bad for the brain. The preliminary results from the world's largest sleep study have shown that people who sleep an average of 7 to 8 hours a night perform better cognitively than those who slept less or more than this amount. And Western neuroscientists at the Brain and Mind Institute released their findings in the peer-reviewed journal Sleep. Now, according to the study, approximately half of all participants reported typically sleeping around 8 hours. Some would sleep a little more, some would sleep less. All told, came to about 6.3 hours a night, about an hour less than the study's recommended amount. One startling revelation was that most participants who slept 4 hours or less performed as if they were almost 9 years older. Now, why is that important that we understand this? Because right now there are people, careerists, people who have achieved some measure of success as lawyers, doctors, engineers, accountants, professors, artists, and because they are wed so intimately to their work, they don't set appropriate boundaries between private time for their family, their friends, themselves, enjoying cultural events, enjoying nature, just enjoying downtime. Rarely is there downtime. Entrepreneurs, people that own their own business, it's not infrequent to see someone who owns a restaurant working 16 hours a day. Well, by the time you get home, take care of other issues in your life, you're tired. You're not going to get a good night's sleep. You're probably stressed. You're taking that angst with you into bed. If you have an enlarged prostate, if you have urinary incontinence, you might wake up 4 to 6 times during a night and never getting back to that deep, restorative, and healing rapid eye movement sleep. As a result, the pineal gland is not able to secrete enough melatonin to really build your immune system, so you find yourself more susceptible to all forms of infections. That's why anywhere from 6 to 8 hours is fine. Here is where I would differ from them and the scientist. I've had the opportunity to work with tens of thousands of individuals one-on-one. And what I have found, including in over 40 clinical studies, is that when people come into a study, they're almost always coming in because they have imbalances in their health. Might be diabetes or cancer or dementia. When you start detoxifying a person, three things happen almost simultaneously in everyone. Within a week or two, people see they have more energy, less fatigue in the mid-afternoon. They don't feel worn out, and also better sleep. They're going to sleep and falling deeper sleep faster and waking up restored. As one person said, and this is typical, I used to lay in bed for up to 45 minutes, tossing and turning, restless. I just didn't have the vigor to get up out of bed. Now, I wake up, I bounce out of bed, and I am fine, ready to go. Why? Two issues. One is detoxifying from emotional toxicity, the dramas and traumas in our lives, requiring then less sleep. And second, physical pollution of the body, when your body is cleaner, healthier, in balance at the biochemical level, when your blood sugar, your hormones are in normal balance, you require less sleep. So no one is taking into account, I read these studies carefully, that the body requires more sleep when you're toxic or you're stressed or you're depressed. So you clean up the mind and clean up the body, you require less sleep. But if you're not doing that and you're spending too much time in bed, you actually are less able with reasoning and verbal abilities, two of the actions most strongly associated with sleep, and we are getting too much, so it works against you. From Dr. Matthieu Ricard, after 2,000 years of practice, Buddhist monks know that one secret to bliss is to put your mind to it. What's that mean? Science has now shown that happiness can change your brain. That's correct. So what is real happiness and how can we achieve it? Well, I spent a three-hour lecture almost last night discussing this very issue, that what we do to obtain happiness is we look for some form of material marker that if we owned it, possessed it, a person in our lives, and not just a person in our lives, but someone, if we're younger, who's attractive, who meets our cultural expectations, whether we're the same ethnicity, religious background, political idea, and ideological background, the same interest in health. We try to match these common denominators in thinking, as long as that other person is mirroring my interest, there should be harmony, and that would give happiness to the careerist. And I spoke at length about the careerist. By the way, I filmed this same lecture last week. I realized that all over the world, people can't come to a retreat. And so what I did is I filmed about 40 hours on topics and showing really in-depth discussions. And then I'm going to get my editors in New York to edit them and interview other people like Andrew Harvey. I mean, really brilliant people on these same topics. So it'll be a full-fledged documentary on mindfulness and some other issues. Who are we really? And I'll just give you the overview on this, because it ties in with this topic that the Buddhists have had it right. But so have the Taoists and some other people that use meditation to help them in life. That if you looked at a spectrum, and at one end is depression and anxiety and loneliness and a sense of exclusion, where you don't have that wonderful historical multi-generational family present, where you're not able to go to, for example, go to a Sunday dinner at one of your in-laws' house and see all the different generations playing together and loving the fact that they have that bond. Someone's always there to help you, to guide you, to give you some perspective. Now you don't have that. You're alone. And when you're over 50, you start thinking about death. You're on the downside of a life cycle. Things you might have taken for granted, things you might have, opportunities you may have said no to because of insecurity or the wrong opportunities you said yes to without thinking it through, the consequences, now you're living with a lot of doubt about your own capacities. And then you start to realize your life lacks vitalism. There was a time when you were a vitalist. You could do anything you wanted and probably did. You probably succeeded at your career and were exemplary in many ways. Everyone succeeds at something and frequently multiple things. But now you are in a death cycle. You can avoid it. You can deny it. You can try to put other things in front of it so you don't see it. But we all, after 50, know that we only have so many birthdays, so many summers, so many holidays. And frequently the people who are in our lives to help us on our journey, to enjoy the remarkable moments we shared, are no longer there, including friends and family and relationships we hoped would last forever, but they don't. And therefore, did we appreciate them when we had them? Or did we take them for granted until they were gone and then feel that mournfulness that, wow, why didn't I pay attention to what was right in front of me? Why did I keep looking elsewhere? And this goes on in millions of people's minds. And it shouldn't be a preoccupation, it's just a reality. So it's not that any of us are going to escape death, it's how can we reaffirm our right to be relevant every day in our life now until that day comes, instead of hiding behind reality television, a vacuous, empty, vulgar experience, or being preoccupied with work till we're exhausted and have no time for anything, or living drama every day through relationships that are incompatible and non-fulfilling. And so we have a lot of people now who don't want relationships. They don't want someone else's drama in their life. They've seen this. And they're not having the same values as the grandparents and parents who may have had no choice because of the enculturation, but to have a relationship, get married, have a house, and work at a job for the rest of your life, and then go through a procedure of a conditioned, almost karaoke routine where you're mimicking words as if they were your own in a tone that is not in sync with high-level harmonizing. You're pretending to live an authentic life, and it's not your own life. It's someone else's, and you're living through their expectations of you, and we don't like to disappoint people. That said, what do we do to try to gain happiness without realizing we had it all along? We didn't have to do anything. We simply had to reveal it, allow it to manifest through humility and love. And the more we try to find happiness, the further it loses. If we work harder, if we get another promotion, if we get another object, if we get a car, a house, a better partner, whatever it is, that'll make us happy. It doesn't. It never has. It won't. If you're an incomplete person and lonely, do you really think that the most complete happy person in the world was in your life, you'd feel happy? You would actually become more insecure. Because then your expectation is that the other person is there to fulfill my incompleteness. Well, no person who's incomplete can find completeness in another person. It's not humanly possible. And yet we have a whole cottage industry in psychoanalysis that says, well, all you have to do is find someone to harmonize with you, and so two halves become a whole. It's never happened. It can happen. Bringing yourself together as a whole person who is happy, then you're going to harmonize with people or whole people who are happy. That's how it works. And boy, do you save time and energy in life. Because this isn't a dress rehearsal. You can't do it over. Well, the Buddhists had this a long time ago. And what did the two things that the Buddhists said that are absolutely universally true? A, you have no more time. And B, detach from the outcome. You can share, but you shouldn't obsess. You shouldn't force any of your views or beliefs on anyone else. A, they didn't ask it. And B, it's not your right. It's your right to live your own lives. So happiness can't be reduced to a few agreeable sensations. Rather, it is a way of being and of experiencing the world, a profound fulfillment that suffuses every moment and endures despite inevitable setbacks. And the paths that we take in search of happiness often lead us to frustration and suffering instead. We try to create outer conditions that we believe will make us happy, but but it is the mind itself that translates outer conditions into the happiness or suffering. This is why we can be deeply unhappy even though we have it all, wealth, power, celebrity, even a good family. And conversely, we can remain strong and sincere in the face of hardship. I can show you many people I've met in my life who you would think of, why are you happy? You have so little and you have trauma and you have suffered. And still they smile, no matter what burden they have been. They have been able to understand that their burden does not compete in its importance to their happiness. Authentic happiness is a way of being and a skill to be cultivated. When we first begin, the mind is vulnerable and untamed, like that of a restless child. You need practice to gain inner peace and inner strength and altruistic love and forbearance and other qualities that lead to authentic happiness. The Dalai Lama often teaches that although there are limits to how much information one can learn and to our physical performance, compassion is boundless. So let us begin practicing happiness. Beginning is not difficult. You just have to sit from time to time, turn your mind within, and let your thoughts calm down. Focus your attention on a chosen object. It can be an object in your room, in your breath, or your mind. Inevitably, your mind will wander as you do this. Each time it does, gently bring it back to the object of concentration, like a butterfly that returns again and again to a flower. And in the freshness of the present moment, past is gone, future is not yet born, and if one remains in pure mindfulness and freedom, disturbing thoughts arise and go without leaving a trace. That is basic meditation. Pure consciousness without content is something all those who meditate regularly and seriously have experienced. In effect, you're in the zone of being. And one last thing, and that is a study from Loma Linda University, a healthy way to get more into your body, eat pistachios. So it is one of the nuts that we generally don't eat a lot of, and we should. So having pistachios, you already know the importance of almonds and walnuts. It's good for your blood pressure. It's good for your heart. It's a good source of the essential fatty acids. And it's good for controlling and producing sustained energy. I'm Gary Nall, and that's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment with special commentary and an original investigative report. Before we go, however, I want to mention that the world has been misled concerning Syria and much of the events in the Middle East. Understandably, because the media has chosen to acquiesce to special interest groups. There are hundreds of thousands of lobbyists, consultants, and people who are forwarding the message of the military-industrial complex, for example. And there are over 200,000 contractors in Washington and Maryland alone, in Virginia. These people are not interested in peace. They go bankrupt if the world becomes a peaceful place. So they have us motivated by the fear that in any given moment we could be the victim of a nefarious act. Russia, China, Iran attacking the United States. Well, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Yet they make us believe it will. They want us to spend trillions of dollars on worthless jets and new nuclear arms. And they've had all the support of the Bushes, the Clintons, the Obamas, and the Trumps. So today at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we will share truth to their lies on CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times and Washington Post. They have brilliant reporters, and some certainly deserve their Pulitzer Prizes. They have people fully capable of writing the truth, but rarely do I read it. I read a commentary yesterday, an opinion piece on a Saudi journalist who has disappeared and feared dead. But in that commentary, everything that should have been said about how corrupt Saudi Arabia is and the war in Yemen was all whitewashed by Friedman. And he's won 3 Pulitzer Prize. And yet he refuses to tell the complete unblemished truth and the consequences of we selling arms to Saudi Arabia and what they've done in Yemen, a genocide, massive killing. And yet he hasn't gone to Yemen. He hasn't looked in the eyes of a starving child or woman that's been beaten. He hasn't gone to Saudi Arabia and looked at all the videos, because they video all these public executions. They go right out into the middle of a street. They stop the traffic. Everyone gathers around, and they take a woman, and they cut off her head. They crucify gays. Where is the Me Too for the women in Yemen and the women in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and all these other highly racist and Sunni, Wahhabi, extreme representations of what should not be a violent religion, but in their interpretation is. They should not speak and do not speak for moderates. But you wouldn't know that based upon the power they wield and the thousands of madrasas breeding the next group of extremists who've been desensitized to the value of life and the respect for other religions, or even different views of Islam, like the Shia. So when I read these papers and I see the gross bias from people who are fully capable of articulating the truth, I think, wow, how unfortunate their readers, their listeners, their viewers will not know the full story. Well, we give you the full story. Tonight, Vanessa Beely, that's B-E-E-L-E-Y, a British investigative journalist focusing on the conflicts in the Middle East, particularly Syria, Gaza, and Yemen. And she's the associate editor of 21st Century Wire and a member of the peace-finding mission to Syria organized by the U.S. Peace Council. She will be here telling us the truth about how we, the United States, and France, and Great Britain, and Italy, and Saudi Arabia, and Turkey have been funding the terrorists in a sovereign nation and lying about it, and the terrorist organization, the White Helmets. We will have the story. Remember, we were the first radio network, the Progressive Network, to show you with documented proof from 5 separate investigative journalists who were on the scene in Syria that the White Helmets was a terrorist organization. No other media, not one, gave that story. So listen tonight. It'll be a real interesting hour. Back in a moment for a special in-depth original investigative report. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Nall. 2 years ago, we received information that individuals with good reputations, people that we had some knowledge of, some who had been guests on this program over the years, were being attacked, vilified, their reputations tarnished by editors of Wikipedia, anonymous editors, and every effort to change them back, the inaccuracies was thwarted. We began a 2-year original in-depth investigative report, Richard Gale and myself. Richard is a scholar and we have both published extensively, myself over 700 articles, together at least 70 articles. This is a continuation. Wikipedia, the brainchild of Jimmy Wales, is supposed to be an objective source of world knowledge. Every entry is expected to be researched and written with a sense of balance and fairness and accuracy, and supported with respected and legitimate references. However, for the majority of users who rely upon Wikipedia as their primary source of information, there is no way of knowing if articles reflect and honor the highest of Wikipedia's stated standards. Over the years, we have heard time and again of highly respected experts with impeccable professional credentials, real scholars, who have published in peer-reviewed literature, presented their information before august bodies of science, who have been viciously attacked on their Wikipedia biographies. Some have had their reputation seriously strained and stained and even destroyed. Yet there is no viable channel that we can find for them to receive due process. Jimmy Wales keeps his Wikipedia and Wikimedia Foundation hermetically sealed from the encyclopedia that serves as a battleground for editorial domination by a vast army of volunteer editors. Therefore, we have performed our own in-depth investigations to determine for ourselves whether their claims are accurate and true. During the past 2 years, we have spoken with present and past Wikipedia editors and former employees and notable international celebrities who have been victimized on Wikipedia, including Drs. Rupert Sheldrake and Dean Baker. All of those who have communicated with us spoke about the enormous problems they encountered with Wikipedia's editorial structure in order to have false or misleading and derogatory information changed from their personal biographical pages or from sites dealing with certain topics, usually concerning medicine and health. Making even a minor successful change to bring accuracy on some pages can often take well over a year, or not at all. If one of these individual accusations is accurate, it presents a problem for correction. However, if all of these complaints are accurate, then in our opinion, it represents a dangerous scandal that is embedded and now systemic in the entire Wikipedia platform. The results of our independent research, which have been carefully documented and legally vetted, indicates Wikipedia's presumed open access editorial policy is one of the largest, lesser-known conspiracies currently in full operation on the Internet. In our article, we look at the case of biologist Dr. Rupert Sheldrake. However, our previous dozen reports provide further evidence that a culture of corruption and malfeasance exist as a controlling force on Wikipedia. It starts with Jimmy Wales and runs throughout the fetid dark side of Wikipedia's editorial system. Ever since Wikipedia came online, it has had its detractors and critics. Yet increasingly, its reliability is being questioned by prestigious institutions and credible journalists, including the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT's Technology Review, and the recently launched Wikipedia Project at Yale University. Writing for the Huffington Post, journalist Sam Slovic asked a question we should all be asking ourselves every time we click into Wikipedia. Slovic asks, quote, "Has Jimmy Wales' marauding encyclopedia beast finally corrupted the Internet? Has Wikipedia lost all credibility? Is purported neutral system compromised by toxic editors?" End quote. The most toxic Wikipedia editors are now terrorizing and sabotaging the encyclopedia's pages more often than not, and they're anonymous, non-experts, and computer hacks who identify themselves with an extreme form of scientific materialism known as skepticism. Skepticism, in my personal opinion, represents the new Inquisition, the new McCarthyism, the new witch trials of Salem. That's the level that I feel these people function on. That is my personal opinion. These editors now dominate large numbers of Wikipedia entries dealing with non-conventional medicine, parapsychology, and doctors and researchers who advocate these disciplines. As we've described and documented in the past, skeptic editors do not limit their vitriolic attacks to Wikipedia pages dedicated to science and medical theories and practices they oppose. They also rule over Wikipedia's biographies for important living personalities and practitioners and researchers in these fields. Their intention is quite singular: to deny Wikipedia users access to reliable information about health modalities and leading individuals in these fields. And these are the people who skeptics have targeted as enemies of their opinionated ideas about scientific progress. So one person in particular who has been targeted harshly over the decade is Dr. and Professor Rupert Sheldrake. Rupert Sheldrake is a British biologist. He has authored over 85 important scientific papers and 13 books. He has been a scholar at Cambridge University, where he earned his doctorate in biochemistry. He was later a fellow at Harvard University, studying the history of science, and while at Cambridge, Clare College, Dr. Sheldrake was the director of studies in biochemistry and cell biology. He has been credited with co-discovering the functions behind the transportation of the hormone auxin in plants. He has also held positions at the world-renowned Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, Trinity College at Cambridge University, and is currently a fellow at the Institute of Noetic Sciences in California. He was ranked among the top 100 global thought leaders for 2013 by the Duttweiler Institute, Switzerland's leading think tank. Now imagine for a moment, let's just pause. You've been selected by some of the brightest people on the planet as being one of the brightest people on the planet. Not because of your politics. Nobody knows your politics. You're not promoting any political or ideological agenda. Not because of your wealth. You're not wealthy. You just are an average person when it comes to wealth. No different than most of the people in your field. But your mind is extraordinarily wealthy. And the kind of knowledge you create, as well as the knowledge that you share. So imagine then seeing yourself denigrated, out and out lies about you. So in the opinion of many, including several Nobel Prize laureates, Dr. Sheldrake has been one of the world's most innovative and important postmodern visionaries, a scientist unafraid to think and research outside of the confinements of what is regarded as acceptable areas of scientific investigation. He is an ardent believer in the need for scientific experimentation and validation. But at the same time, he does not share scientific materialism's view that the underlying nature of reality is a closed book. He questions the skeptic doctrine that postmodern science knows with certainty all the scientific fundamentals of nature. Nothing more is to be learned except for identifying and understanding the finer details to fill in the gaps, so they believe. He does not. Early in his professional career at Cambridge, Sheldrake was regarded as, quote, one of the brightest Darwinians of his generation. This was according to an early expose about the biologist in The Guardian. Today, he is a heretic, with a price on his head among the skeptic community and leaders in the new atheism. Wikipedia skeptics have become grand inquisitors against scientists like Sheldrake who dare to investigate phenomena they disapprove. when the journal Nature reviewed Sheldrake's first book, A New Science of Life, in 1981, it deemed it, quote, a book for burning, end quote. Nature's review is prominently noted on Sheldrake's Wikipedia page. Real science has never been about certainty. The Search for Knowledge, writes Carol Rovelli, the best-selling author of Seven Brief Lessons on Physics in the United Kingdom, quote, is not nourished by certainty. It is nourished by a radical distrust of certainty. This is in sharp contrast to Sheldrake's skeptic critics who regard the fundamental underlying rules of science, whether it be our DNA or the causal factor for disease or the quantum appearance of particles, as the law of the land. Any deviation from this axiom, according to skeptics, is apostasy. Following Francis Fukuyama's discredited theory about the end of history, skeptics now held the dawn of the end of science. Sheldrake's Wikipedia page, along with that of his colleague, Dr. Deepak Chopra, have been among the most contentious and volatile biographies of living persons on the site. Their biographies are among the most blatant misreadings of famous personalities on Wikipedia and are completely controlled by administrators within the skeptic community. Sheldrake's first biography, created in October 2002, was limited to two sentences. That's it, two sentences and a link to his personal website. Quote, Rupert Sheldrake, 1942, is a British biologist and author of several books. In his 1981 book, The New Science of Life, he put forward the hypothesis of formative causation, which basically suggests that memory is inherent in nature, end quote. That's it. Today, his biography is many pages and has increased to 9 major headings and 12 separate subheadings. Rather than identifying him as a biologist, which he is, only noting this title in the past tense, Sheldrake is being falsely identified as, quote, a parapsychologist on the page's leading paragraph. That's by intent. Although Sheldrake conducts experiments in telepathy, this association is erroneous because he does not hold a degree in parapsychology or psychology. Reviewing the many thousands of edits made to his biography during the past 16 years is to observe how brutal and vicious the wiki war spawned by skeptics can be. Sheldrake's wiki talk page begins with a warning, quote, the subject of this article is controversial and the content may be in dispute. When updating the article, be bold but not reckless. Feel free to try to improve the article, but don't take it personally if your changes are reversed. Instead, come here to talk to the talk page to discuss them. The arbitration committee has authorized uninvolved administrators to impose discretionary sanctions on users who edit pages related to living or recently deceased people and edits related to the subject, living or recently deceased, of such biographical articles, including this article. The arbitration committee has authorized uninvolved administrators to impose discretionary sanctions on users who edit pages related to pseudoscience and fringe science, including this article, end quote. Wow. Wow. Here we observe, in their own language, Wikipedia's own committee aligned itself with a flagrant bias to identify Sheldrake's scientific research as pseudoscience. In his book, Science Set Free, Sheldrake undertakes a meticulous investigation into the fallacies of scientific materialism and its reductionist premises, which in turn have served as the stalwart of contemporary skepticism. His premise is that a distinction should be made between the scientific method that attempts to understand nature and philosophical materialism, which serves as a subjective biased dogma and has been repeatedly employed to discredit non-conventional medicine, parapsychology, and the theories of non-localized consciousness as something other than neurological activities taking place within the brain. According to skeptic materialism, all of these non-conventional disciplines and theories are unbelievable and therefore qualify to be labeled as pseudoscientific. After reading Science Set Free, it is very obvious why Wikipedia skeptics attack it so ferociously. Sheldrake draws out skepticism's weakest arguments and dissects their rational conclusions to prove their scientific unsoundness. Science Set Free was widely reviewed both in the United States and Europe. Wikipedia editors intentionally suggest that positive reviews are limited, quote, to outside the scientific community. Skeptics also make a point of only referencing scientific publications to support negative reviews to debunk Sheldrake's analysis. For example, the book receiving favorable reviews is the prestigious Financial Times by Oxford fellow Sir Crispin Attickle. The Journal for the Institute of Paradigmatic Reforms and the peer-reviewed journal, the Journal of Vocational Education and Training, in a review of Science Set Free and the peer-reviewed Journal of Cancer Research and Therapeutics, the reviewer writes, quote, "The book is very interesting and thought-provoking in more than one sense. The approach he takes is truly scientific. He places the facts, states the existing dogmas, and provides phenomena that counters the dogmas and questions the dogmas," end quote. None of these very respected publications that have given the book praise can be added to his Wikipedia page to bring balance to the biases of Sheldrake's critics who accuse him of promoting, quote, pseudoscience. So here is one of the greatest science writers and thinkers on the planet who now is being called unscientific, and frequently by people who have no background in science at all. What has made Wikipedia so unreliable and a source of disinformation in the medical sciences is that its very editorial model eschews real experts from contributing. There's something seriously wrong when a notable person like Sheldrake is unable to correct or edit his or her own Wikipedia page because of an anonymous administrator who has risen to become the final judge overseeing an entry. Clearly, Wikipedia has become so unmanageable that it is outside the scope of Jimmy Wales' Wikimedia Foundation to rein in the corruption, misinformation, biased interest, and ideological wars plaguing numerous page entries. This would be the case unless it can be shown that Jimmy Wales and or the Foundation intentionally provide special editorial privileges to specific outside interests that prevent a fair and balanced entry on any given topic. And in our previous investigative reports, we have documented that indeed this is the case. Jimmy Wales is publicly vocal about his personally embracing skepticism's ideological dogma. The consequence has been that Wells has permitted skeptics to judge the good guys as liars and, quote, lunatic charlatans. That's Jimmy Wells' own choice of words. So let us step back for a moment. Let us look at this from a different perspective. Let it say that you are a board-certified oncologist. You have trained at the best schools, and you've been working at Sloan Kettering for decades. But you hear about other ways of approaching cancer. There are other doctors, other oncologists, also board certified, highly respected, who are getting results you're not. Now, you have been straight with the existing paradigm. You only accept chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. You've not even considered any other possibilities for treating cancer. But once you take a look with your own eyes, and you visit patients, review their medical records, speak with their physicians, and you see that they're getting statistically significant greater results of recovery and non-relapse, and they're not using chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery. Instead, using natural biological approaches to enhance the person's natural killer cell activity, build up their immune system. What do you do? On the one hand, you're caught between two paradigms, one that is greater in safety and efficacy, and yet it's not accepted. Yours is accepted and well-paying and respected, but most patients die. There's a high rate of failure. Now, this is where a lot of people are. So would you then call the people, the doctors, maybe about 200 or 300 into a room, all of whom have saved cumulatively thousands of patients from terminal cancer? They're now alive and well 5 years later. The patients are in the room. Their medical records are in the room. You've reviewed the medical records. You've spoken with the doctors. You understand their therapy. Would you say you're a bunch of lunatic charlatans because I can't understand your results? So to me, these are implausible and ridiculous. What kind of person would do that? Jimmy Wells has done that. Those are his words. So if you were having excruciating back pain and you had taken opiates, but without good results, and you tried other pain medications, but they weren't good, you went to a chiropractor, and after a series of treatments, the pain was lessened or eliminated, and you felt much better. What if you went to a homeopath with similar to good results, or an Ayurvedic specialist, or a person practicing traditional Chinese medicine, or a person doing yoga and meditation and body-mind medicine? What if you went to a nutritionist, went on a vegan plant-based diet, and suddenly you lost weight, your diabetes was under control? Would you get them all together and say, look, you're all lunatic charlatans. Your patients are delusional. If they tell you they feel better, they're lying. Because that, in summary, and by analogy, that is what the skeptic community has been saying. So let's just say that you are an oncologist, and you have had remarkable results using natural non-toxic therapies. So you tell one of these skeptics, you're calling me a lunatic charlatan, a liar. First of all, what's your background? Are you an oncologist? No. Are you a medical doctor? No. Do you have any background in the public health sciences? No. Have you ever treated a patient? No. Okay. Have you ever sat in the office of someone who has using these modalities? No. I don't have to. Because at Wikipedia, you don't have to have any qualifications whatsoever. I could be an iron worker. But when it comes to judging you, the oncologist or the chiropractor or the homeopath or anyone else, including a Rupert Sheldrake, I can judge you. I can destroy you, and you can't do a damn thing about it. Here's my middle finger. Wow. You see, for all the journalists in the world, you haven't done your homework, have you? You've accepted that this Wikipedia is objective and fair, and the people are experts in their field. You wouldn't start off calling someone a lunatic, a charlatan, because then you've already showed your bias to hundreds of millions of people who've used these therapies and the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of clinicians. You're throwing them all under the bus. So it's worth noting that skeptics on Wikipedia not only control and protect their criticisms and defamation of non-conventional medical practices and theories and holistic doctors and parapsychologists, they also protect and bar criticism from the Wikipedia pages of the leading voices in the skeptic movement. Dr. Jerry Connie is an American biologist and a professor emeritus at the University of Chicago, is arguably the leading bad boy, in parentheses, among skeptics. He has a reputation for launching scathing attacks against all religions, intelligent design, and scientists researching hypotheses that overlap with paranormal theories. Along with Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, he is a major spokesperson for the new atheism and takes pride in stating he is a, quote, determinist. According to those who have encountered and debated him, he is seemingly short-tempered and has been reported to stalk his opponents to prevent them from being given a public voice at professional venues. Such was the case in his attempt to persuade a prestigious university to disinvite Rupert Sheldrake from presenting a lecture. His rational wiki page would indicate that he takes pleasure in instigating fierce debates and launches diatribes against those who disagree with him. Philosophy professor Massimo Pigliucci at the City University of New York, who has had a long-standing debate with Richard Dawkins on issues concerning evolutionary biology, charged that he, quote, suffers from hero worship and is in a selective dearth of critical thinking, end quote. We mention him because he is closely affiliated with the internet militant group Guerrilla Skeptics on Wikipedia, founded by his associate Tim Farley and Susan Gerbic. I have a question, just a question. Susan Gerbic, if you're listening to this, have you ever treated anyone? Are you a registered dietitian? Are you a clinical nutritionist? Are you a nurse, a dentist? Are you a chiropractor, homeopath, osteopath? Are you a medical doctor? And if so, what specialty? Cardiology, oncology, neurology, gastroenterology? What? Have you published peer-reviewed journals? If so, in which peer-reviewed journals? Have you done original scientific research? Have you been invited by prestigious scientific institutions to present your scientific research? I could be wrong, but I could find nothing in your background that would qualify you to stand in judgment of people who have those credentials, degrees, and experience. Have you actually contacted any of the people that you attack and edit their pages? Have you actually confronted them personally with your concerns and allowed them an opportunity of due process, intellectual due process at least, to address your concerns? I'm not aware if you have. If you have, share that information with me. As we have documented earlier, Gerbic's guerrilla skeptics control many Wikipedia pages with Jimmy Wales' blessing. And these people had a long-standing conflict with Rupert Sheldrake, especially Coyne. And while serving on the skeptic advisory board of TED Talks, yes, he and his colleagues, including biologist P.Z. Myers, were responsible for censoring Rupert Sheldrake's 2013 TED Talk about scientific materialism's 10 enormous dogmas and how its reductionist delusions hinder the advancement of the biological and psychological sciences. In an article published in the New Republic, the writer begins, quote, Rupert Sheldrake is a pseudoscientist who has made his name promoting various kinds of woo, including telepathy, immortal minds or immaterial minds, and his crazy idea of morphic resonance, a Jungian theory in which all of nature participates in some giant collective memory. Okay, that's your criticism, but he was trained in biochemistry. He's a real scientist. He's a cell biologist. He graduated with those degrees from Cambridge University. So you think that somehow he went off the rails? Craig Weiler, author of PSI Wars, TED, Wikipedia, and the Battle for the Internet, describes the guerrilla skeptics as, quote, a loosely knit secretive organization, like Opus Dei, that operates through private Facebook pages. Weiler investigated their, quote, secretive, end quote, platform and discovered it relies upon intermediary links, which in turn conceals skeptics' real identities. Gerbic and her Wikipedia militants use programs such as Web of Trust and Donetlink. Together with other apps, skeptics are able to boost their own sites and the Wikipedia pages they control on search engines, while subjects associated with their detractors, such as sites dealing with alternative medicine, pro-parapsychology, are downgraded. There can be little doubt that these skeptics' efforts are having an enormous and deleterious impact on Wikipedia and its credibility. In one of Gerbic's training videos, she states, listen carefully, because I can promise you that I have yet to find a journalist who knows what I'm about to say. in her words, Gerbic's words, quote, "So they're getting information from here, so we can control this. This is so powerful, you don't understand. When you put one of these guerrilla skepticism edits up on Jenny McCarthy's page or Priceline or Walmart or just some of these pages, you're like glowing inside. It's so powerful to feel like I've made such an impact. Hundreds of thousands of people can be reading my edit, homeopathy. We've changed that page drastically. The lead, the very, very first couple of sentences of the page, which most people, it's the only thing they read, we use the word quackery. I mean, it's awesome," end quote. And Gerbic doesn't hold back her acknowledgement that her guerrilla skeptics own Wikipedia pages. Quote, "Nobody owns their Wikipedia page. We control the Wikipedia pages, the editors, everyone. And because we're organized and we have this project, we are as a skeptic since we're focused on this. We're not updating bowling page or internet fans or something like that. This is our thing. We need to have this. Scientific pages are pretty dang good. They're in really great shape," end quote. Gerbic makes it clear that she and Farley recruit through the international network of evangelical skeptics who have no professional experience whatsoever in accurately editing a page on medicine or parapsychology. Quote, "I can't give my opinion on Wikipedia, but I can, through our spokespeople, give an opinion of how I feel about a topic and so on, so I'm writing through other people, but I need that content first from the JREF, that's the James Randi Educational Foundation, and the CSI, that's the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, and from Ben Radford or from Ray Hyman, whoever. I need the content first, and then I can edit the page," end quote. Wow. The hair on the tail of the dog wagging the dog. According to Weiler, Gerbic also presented a strategy for skeptic militants to, quote, attack, end quote, the Wikipedia page about pet psychics, which referenced Rupert Sheldrake's research. Weiler concludes, quote, "Much of skeptical sourcing is merely skeptics citing opinions from notable skeptics or from articles in skeptical publications. Rarely do they venture far outside the skeptical echo chamber to get their information," end quote. In no uncertain terms, Wikipedia distinguishes what is reliable and unreliable sources to reference on its pages. Skepticism's newsletters, magazines, and blogs do not qualify as legitimate, objective references. They are not peer-reviewed. None are acknowledged as mainstream publications, and their articles speak to only a tiny segment of the English-speaking public. Nevertheless, their sources are repeatedly found throughout skeptic-controlled Wikipedia pages in order to promulgate their narrow perception of science and discredit others. Negative reviews about one of the author's books, Faith versus Fact, Why Science and Religion Are Incompatible, have appeared in the Wall Street Journal and Scientific America. The journal's reviewer, John Horgan, and director of the Center for Science Writing at the Stevens Institute of Technology, writes, quote, "Coney's defenses of science and denunciations of religion are so relentlessly one-sided that they arouse my antipathy towards the former and sympathy towards the latter. He overlooks any positive consequences of religion, such as its role in anti-slavery, civil rights, and anti-war movements. He inflates religion's contributions to public resistance towards vaccines and genetically modified food and human-induced global warming," end quote. He denies that humans possess free will. He believes that, and what we assume is the freedom of choice, is only based upon genetic determinism. Horgan writes, quote, "Mr. Coyne's critique of free will, far from being based on scientific facts, betray how his hostility towards religion distorts his judgment," end quote. He concludes that the book, quote, serves as a splendid specimen of scientism. This sort of arrogance and certitude is the essence of scientism, end quote. In conclusion, according to Wikipedia criteria, both the Wall Street Journal and Scientific America are very reliable sources of reference. Nevertheless, attempts to cite criticism about this man's research and books cannot pass the skeptic guarding his bio. The same is true for all the leading spokespersons in the skeptic movement, including Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett, James Randi, and Susan Gerbic, as well as the movement's more prominent medical doctors such as Stephen Novella, David Gorski, and Paul Offit. And there is plenty of criticism to cite for each of these individuals to bring balance to their biographies and permit users to decide themselves. Just as factual evidence and references are not permitted to support the scientific credibility of alternative medicine and parapsychology and its proponents, nor can factual criticism of publicly visible skeptic thought leaders be added for Wikipedia users to have a more accurate base. They sanitize their own bios. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Ooh, every day there's something new.